sometimes I just want to bring that. Like, is it just nice? Like, you. Just come here for 30 minutes and let's have a nice time.
Okay. I'll have a nice time with you. Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka. And today, Beanerine, we are going to talk about skepticism and spirituality. And can we be spiritual yet skeptical?
Ooh, I like it.
Thanks. Hi, folks. Hi, friends. Hi, everybody.
Hi, friends.
If you tuned in last week, you heard all about our new plans and our new system over here. So we're going to get right started into our first section of...
You don't even get to ask me how I'm doing.
How are you doing? Hey, how are you doing?
I feel like I need a little primer. I feel like I need a little lube.
A little lube? Sorry. I just shoved it right in.
You need to warm me up, girl.
Maybe, and I like
you. You just went right for it.
I did. I'm hot and
hype. Wine and dine, girl.
Hot and hype. Okay, well, I like your lightning shirt. It's feeling electric.
I'm bringing the energy.
You're bringing the energy. Love it.
How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Still struggling with a little bit of a broken air conditioner, which feels a little hot and sweaty.
Ew, especially on the East Coast. Gross. Yeah,
luckily, it's summer decided to end at its own time, and it like just went to pretty cold.
Oh,
summer weird. Was like, I've had it here. I'm out.
That's not allowed. Don't talk about that. You know, yesterday I got an email because I'm on the board of a nonprofit that helps in schools kids.
Say the name of the nonprofit.
Oh, absolutely. It's called AHA. Please check us out. AHA, Santa Barbara. We help. There's these amazing programs with facilitators, really trained counselors. They go into junior high and high schools and they hold groups where kids basically learn how to talk about the way they're feeling so they don't internalize it. And then it doesn't turn into harm of themselves or other people. Anyway, we got told by a principal that, you know, the federal government had the Supreme Court pass, and I'm going to put it that way because that's what's happening. The federal government can have the Supreme Court do whatever it wants. There's a list of banned words. You know this, right? Like, did you hear about earlier in the summer they were scrubbing the websites?
Yep.
Well, the things on that word are like climate change,
you can't
water
say
runoff. You can't say water runoff.
Right.
Female was on the list.
Wait, you can't say female? What are you allowed to say? How do we...
I don't know. Don't say it. Don't say it on this podcast. You can't say inclusivity. You can't say diverse. You can't say immigrant. Anyway, so what happens is if you're going to teach that curriculum, if you didn't listen to last time's episode, Bean is bringing
don't
us back
to
Mel Robbins. Right. Don't let them.
Anyway,
long story short, if you're going to teach that stuff, you have to send a letter home to the parents, and then they can opt their children out. So I'm gonna send you the banned word list, and you can't say that the temperature is changing and it's weird in Pennsylvania. That's not happening.
Oh, okay.
We don't live in that reality.
Oh, climate change is not real.
Correct.
Can I say that? Okay.
Yes. So that's how I'm doing. Shall we get into it?
I don't even know how we got this. Got dark and sad real fast.
I was really upset.
It is upsetting. This is all extraordinarily disturbing. This
terrifying.
Whole world. Let's keep it, you know what, like keep it a little
keep it
light.
Okay, sorry.
Right. Aren't people coming here to like relax for a minute, speaking out by
Let's relax and ignore what's happening in the world.
No, not ignore it. Like I've been listening to Good Hang with Amy Poehler, who I freaking adore.
Fun.
And it's just nice. Sometimes
Agreed.
I just want to bring that. Like, it's just nice.
I got
like,
you.
Just come here for 30 minutes and let's have a nice time.
Okay. I'll have a nice time with you.
Okay, great. You want a hotter
What you got for me? Yeah, it's time for hot or hype, Bean.
I'm not gonna lie. You keep me young and hip. You are more tuned in and tapped into the social media than I am. So I think that you keep me fresh and updated on all the hot topics that are going on these days. Because truthfully, when we discussed this,
Thanks.
I said, I don't know what the hell that is. But then I looked into it. Today on our hot or hype episode segment, we're going to be talking about, ready? Trauma Core. Trauma Corps. You're making a face.
Well, I'm nervous.
I also like that we're hot or hype. Something called Trauma Corps. Hot or hype. Oh my gosh. It's like the Bruno, for anyone who's seen the Bruno, Sacha Baron Cohen, when he's like, he's trying to say if things are great or if.
Oh yeah, great.
Or like, it's good. Or train to Auschwitz. That's how he says God. Bad.
You're right. You're so right. I forgot about that.
Hot or hype. Y'all.
Wow, way to keep it light.
Sorry. Anyway, I'm just going to give you a real quick seize on what Trauma Corps is because I myself didn't know. So it draws upon delicate childlike imagery, but kind of makes it disturbing at the same time. Like think maybe porcelain dolls or an empty swing at a playground. Like there's some sort of childlike wonder to it. But the imagery, there's darkness and sadness. And a larger point of contrast in the Trauma Corps is usually the language used on top of what might appear as like something kind of darling. Like examples would be, I am broken, you used me, rotten child, like really heartbreaking language. It is typically there to represent abuse that most likely happened in childhood, which is why they use these childlike images. Somehow Hello Kitty has become involved a lot with Trauma Corps, I guess because it's like this very pure and innocent concept. Dolls, angels, bedrooms. There's a big contrast between the imagery and the text. They do the disturbing messages. Of course, a doll or character from children's media. I don't know.
Like Clifford, the big red dog, and then it's a sad moment.
That's really horrible.
I feel sad.
Anyway, it's just it's an expression. It's an expression of art of someone's how they want to translate their trauma and their own experience into an image. I can't.
Yeah, you're having a hard time.
I'm having a hard time because it was slightly disturbing to read about. In fact, when I was trying to talk to ChatGPT about it and ask for some examples of images, Chat would not give me examples of images.
Oh, really?
Yes, I had to search elsewhere. Chat was like, I can't do that.
Okay, girl, do you know where the term Trauma Corps comes from? I really need to understand, what does this word mean?
I don't. Do you?
Well, I'm going to Google it now. I'm just going to read what Google says. Ready?
Google it.
Typity type.
Now I feel awkward making this hot or hype.
Right. You were like, let's keep this light. Trauma Corps.
Child images with disturbing messages.
Okay. So it says late 2010s, it emerged as part of the rise of visually driven, right? Like Instagram, obviously. Yeah. Blends childlike nostalgia visuals with dark, unsettling themes. The term fuses trauma, wound, and core, heart or essence. So literally it conveys the heart of trauma. Wow. Okay. So
hot or hype, me. Hot or hype.
Okay. I think that the trend obviously is older, like if it's from the 2010s.
No, so, it started in the 2010s.
But it's big now. Yeah, I guess I do.
You
see
told me.
I feel like this was the predecessor of very openly sharing your trauma on social media.
Yes.
Like talking without shame about the really dark things that have happened in your past. So I don't know about the like imagery being the swing set with the sad words. I guess that's a form of self-expression.
Correct.
But if this is allowing for trauma to be discussed without shame, I'm going to go hot. I hate that I'm calling it hot, but I'm going to go yes. It's a thumbs up for me on this.
Oh, good. I'm not going to.
What do you think?
I'm not going to disagree. Like, I feel like self-expression is self-expression. I think the criticism comes from simplifying something as horrifying as like childhood abuse. But it's not, if you're representing your own abuse in that way, and that's something that you find comforting, I don't think it's diminishing anyone's emotion if it's your own way of representing it. You know what I mean? I'm going to say, if you're into it and it makes you feel safe, hot.
I bet you that a lot of the cynicism comes from also where you fall in terms of like the woke or not woke spectrum. Because going back to my banned word list, I do think there's an effort to go back to the 50s, keep it all under the surface. Everything is awesome. America is great. We are happy.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of the criticism comes from people who are like, ew, don't put your trauma in front of my face. I think that that reaction comes from not wanting to face your own. Oh. And I'm not for that. I don't think that elevates our consciousness whatsoever. So I'm going to go double hot.
Wow. Double hot. Core. I kind of thought that the criticism was more based around the idea that we're like simplifying some like large issue.
I can see that. Yeah. But I think if it's self-expression,
Right. Do it. It's not up to me to tell you how to share your trauma. It's up to you to share your trauma.
I'm with it. Look at us. We agreed. We agreed on our second hotter hype.
Speaking of cynicism. Well,
thanks for sharing that, Bean.
Yeah. Speaking of cynicism, that really leads me to our main course here, our entree, if you will.
Okay. I'm down. I can't wait for this one.
I thought this was particularly wonderful that I'm running the show here for this one, because half the reason I feel like I was brought onto this pod is because I am one skeptic little bitch. I feel like, right? Skeptical. I push back.
You're not bitchy about it.
No, I'm not bitchy. I'm one skeptical little sweetheart. I came on here because I still have a lot of questions and I'm still super fresh in my spirituality journey. And I still wake up some days fully in, and I wake up other days like, you're losing your goddamn mind. You're just like in a weird place and you're grasping. So I think that it's particularly therapeutic for me to go through this episode with you as well.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. I do get this question a lot.
Oh, you do?
Like, can I be skeptical and spiritual at the same time? A lot.
It's hard because it makes you kind of feel like I'm not a true believer if I'm wavering all the time, you know?
Right.
Anyway.
Let's get into it then.
Well, a lot of people did. A lot of people are skeptical. They enter it with skepticism based on some sort of trauma from another sort of religion or any other group that they came in from that kind of burned them or harmed them in some way, or they realized was not all it was cracked up to be. So when they start to explore spirituality, they also enter it with skepticism. But I'm going to say, I don't think it's all so bad. I think that we need to reframe this idea that being skeptical is really shitty and makes you a non-believer. I think there's a lot of healthy purposes for us being skeptical.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Oh, well, thank you. I wasn't sure until I really hashed this out in my own head. I think it acts as a protective mechanism initially. I mean, for me, I definitely think that's what it does. It's especially when things, especially truly when I feel like something is resonating really deeply, my back kind of goes up even more because I'm almost scared to let myself believe in it and get that deep into it. So I'll sort of back up and put it like a skeptical shield up so that I can make sure it's really sitting with me the way that it feels like it's sitting with me. And I don't want to blindly just trust anybody.
What's scary about it when it really resonates?
I think just the idea that I'm not fully in that.
What's an example? Sorry, so that we're not like up in the clouds.
Okay.
What is an example of something that you were skeptical about that resonated deeply, but your skepticism was like, oh, hell no.
Okay.
What's an example?
It's currently happening, actually. And I'm just starting to really unpack it a little bit. It's astrology. Mm. I love the idea of it. I have always very casually read my horoscope, even as a teenager, you know, and there was always something fun and like fantasy about it to me. But I never really believed that the way things were lined up when you were born impacted anything. And then the more I'm diving in, I don't know what made me start diving in. There's so much accuracy. It's almost horrifying how accurate some of these concepts are pertaining to me specifically. And then I even try to like apply some of them to other people I know to see if it's just generic enough. And it doesn't. Like there are things that are very particular to me and my personality based on my chart. Mm. I actually have a reading right after this, right when
you
we get
do?
Off of this. Yes.
So astrology right now is something you're grappling with, and there's a part of you that wants to believe or resonates with it.
There's just a part that is so accurate that it's hard to ignore. That's what
okay,
I feel
so
like.
Okay, so what this is where I get so fascinated, and I think it's going to be helpful to other people who relate. What is the fear in there around believing in astrology? What is the fear saying?
It's too woo-woo. There's not enough science. I'm always like, show me the proof, which is why spirituality in general has been challenging for me to fully adopt, because I need like evidence all the time. But then why is the evidence not in, why is the proof not in the pudding? Like, I'm seeing these things and they're super accurate. Like, why? I don't know. I guess also it's a protective mechanism in that, what if it's inaccurate?
Those are reasons not to believe. Those are the reasons not to believe. It's woo-woo. There's no science. But what's the fear?
The fear comes mostly from the predictions that come from me, that come from astrology, is leaning too much into that and believing deeply, and then the possibility to be disappointed.
There we go.
There. Thank you.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Skepticism around spiritual awakening, or believing, having faith.
Yes.
Is about trying to protect yourself from being disappointed.
Yes. 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 Yeah. That's basically my whole journey here, is to protect myself from being disappointed. You're right. And I don't like being disappointed. And I don't put myself in
situations. Who likes being disappointed?
Right.
Let us know if you like being disappointed. We'd like to hear from you. We want to interview you.
Some people, though, are able to put themselves in situations of disappointment easier than others. And I'm not good at it. I'm not going to lie.
I think I'm going to flip that and say some people are able to have trust and faith more than others.
Yes. How does one do that? Wait, what about you? I want to know. Have you?
What about me?
Like, have you been cynical about anything spirituality wise? Like, you've always been much more of a believer than I have been. In fact, I was reminded quickly when we first, before you, when you were leaving the corporate world and you were sort of starting this vibe that you have now, you said to me, I said, like, you're like, you're not ready to hear this, or something along those lines, because you knew that I was so skeptical that I wouldn't have even been able to hold any space for what you were saying.
Yeah.
But I feel like you dove right in. You were like, let's go.
It doesn't mean I didn't have moments of skepticism, and that I don't still navigate moments of skepticism. And I actually, I don't know if now is the time to tell you what I really think about skepticism and spirituality. We'll get there. But I have absolutely had those moments. I think, I mean, first of all, I will say I have always been highly skeptical of religion.
Right.
But that is because for me, there's a knowing in me that religion, organized religion, comes through the eyes of man, right? Like that it is
correct.
It is interpreted through, and usually literally, men, and that a system like that is obviously going to be utilized for control. So I've definitely always been very skeptical of religion. So like growing up with a Muslim grandmother, she was highly spiritual. I really felt drawn to the spiritual side of what she was doing.
Right.
Like it felt when she was going inward and she was connecting, and she was an excellent manifester. I was like, wow. And she was very psychic. When she would say things to me that were in like the Islamic doctrine, I was always immediately turned off.
Oh.
Like for me, that was when I was like, hard right? left. But even in spirituality, you know, like I met Rhea, who's my mentor, who I dedicated my first book to. She changed my life. When I first met her, just as a tarot card reader, I was hugely skeptical about
right,
tarot.
Right.
That's and right. really skeptical about the things she was saying. And I did need evidence. And a lot of what she said proved itself out in my life. And so that allowed me to be less and less skeptical. And then what I really learned is my skepticism in that was covering up my own fear about my own intuitive abilities and my own abilities to basically do very similar to what Rhea does for other people. And that freaked me out. And so what my skepticism was protecting me from, in addition to, oh my God, Rhea saying I'm going to meet the love of my life and get married and move to California, when I had just gotten divorced, single mom living in Maryland, couldn't
right.
believe it. I didn't want to be disappointed. I didn't want to be like sad. That, yes, that's true. But for me, I also learned a big part of my skepticism was rejecting the part of me that is also deeply intuitive and psychic and able to do similar things, and how that much of that scared me. Because then it was like, well, what the hell are you? You're right. not normal. You're crazy. You're weird. And so I think skepticism helped me try to be a normie, try to like fit in.
Another, this actually is great to lead us to the next part, which is you can use it discernment, which I think I also do. It helps me see, like not dive in all in. It helps me to view whatever practice I'm participating in from a little further away so that I can decide whether I want it to apply to my life or not, which I actually think is a really healthy way of doing a lot of things, you know, like scoping the scene. That's sort of how I am in life too. Like even in meeting, I just kind of sit and I take it all in and then I make a decision.
Listen, that is my main headline on skepticism and spirituality. Like the answer to this question when people ask me is, skepticism is one of the highest frequency spiritual gifts there is.
Right.
Because when you are skeptical, it means that you are asking questions and you're trying to take a concept that is being taught to you and make it your own.
Right.
If you don't ask the questions and you just accept these concepts on face value because someone else told you, you're in a cult.
It's religion. Right. Right.
You're in a cult. You're not actually having a personal relationship with it. So for me, who is all about self-trust, it's got, you have to find a way to make it resonate inside your system. And I think skepticism is the tool that allows you to make it yours instead of someone else's.
I think that sometimes I worry being so skeptical, I'm not allowing in things that actually could be helpful, that maybe my discernment is not completely appropriate, that I'm overly discerning and that I, you know, I'm not holding enough space for things that could be really beneficial.
Is it possible that that is just for now and that eventually you will?
I hope so. I think that's been the case with a lot of the spiritual concepts that I've been.
That's been my, what I've observed about you is that when the time is right and your system is fully ready, you do let it in.
Right. Which a lot.
So I think skepticism for you, skepticism for you just means not right now. Not ever. Not right now.
That's true. Yes. You're right. You're right. But maybe I'm ready now and I don't realize and I'm just scared. A lot of it is fear for me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I thought that this was a very interesting episode. And I bet a lot of our listeners, we've always referred to them as spiritually curious. And to me, that means they're not fully in. They're kind of, they want to understand a little bit more. They probably are being a little skeptical and a little cynical at times. It can also be used as a block, which I think is what you were actually just saying, is that you were scared. Your skepticism around Rhea was fear of what you'd see if you really let it in. So people use it, totally. That's a negative way to use it.
Not negative, but again, I think like it is a, hey, your system's not ready yet. So you're blocking it out and that you need to prepare yourself for, listen, because I do think so much of a individual's spiritual journey is really just about awakening to the truth of what you are.
Right.
That you are this like magnificent being that is connected to much bigger energy and that is powerful and that is capable of so many things more than you were ever taught. And I think that you have to be ready for that knowledge. You have to be ready for how life-changing some of these concepts can be. And if you're not ready, you might not use it the right way in your life. You might not apply it in the way that it needs to be applied because it takes a lot of courage too. So I think the block is a temporary block.
How does one know if they're fully open and ready and that the skepticism is no longer serving them?
You know, because it's not there anymore. You know when it goes away.
Mine never fully goes away. There's always, even when I'm getting deeper into certain concepts and like I've managed, for example, with manifestation, I've managed to kind of make it a little sciencey, like it's really shifting your brain. It's really rewiring the way you're talking to yourself. So like that makes sense to me, but there's still a part of me that's like, what are you saying? What are you talking about?
And you know what? Maybe, I mean, I hear that and it makes me think maybe it never fully goes away, but maybe it's like, if the majority of your system is going to believe it, then that's how you know you've moved through it. You know, maybe you're always going to have a healthy amount. And I do think that's the ego, by the way. I think it's the ego attempting to control the outcome and attempting to control the identity, the ego being in the illusion that it has some control.
Right.
Right. Needing that illusion to feel safe.
That. Yep. I need that.
And so your ego is definitely just trying to remind you like, hey, we're in control here. Right. Don't give up full control to trust and faith, because that's then what happens to me as an ego?
Yeah. That's 100% me.
That's a lot of people. I think that's the majority of people.
Have you ever been skeptical or cynical about something that you encountered with a healer that ended up actually coming true, that shifted your like skepticism?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I thought you were going to ask, I thought you were asking the opposite, which is like, have I ever been skeptical of a healer and then found out I was right to be skeptical?
Right.
That has happened for sure. As has, you know, like I said, the story about Rhea, there's so many things she told me early on that have come true 10 years later that my brain couldn't have even wrapped itself around.
At the
time. When she'd say it, like when she's like, you're going to publish a book, I was like, what?
Right.
I am the vice president of, you know, digital at Edelman. I'm not an author, right? Like I couldn't even conceptualize some of the things that she said. But I will say this. I did have to eventually believe it was true to make it happen.
Right. So how?
I did have to get closer to believing it was true. And what happened was I noticed my desires changing. I noticed my life starting to change and the opportunities beginning to change and the things that needed to end ending. And sometimes those endings were really painful. And then new things beginning. And in that, I started to believe in what I wanted. And it was to have a method and a paradigm and to be a teacher and a guide and an author. And that was the truth of my wanting. And so I think also what the skepticism was protecting me from, and I don't know, tell me if you relate to this, is, oh my God, I'm so afraid of this thing I want because it will break my heart if I don't get it.
Yes, that's the core, I think, of a lot of my skepticism is I want to believe this so badly because it's everything I want. But if that doesn't happen and I put so much trust and faith, what does that say for my trust and faith in anything moving forward?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
if I get hurt or burned here, what's that going to mean? Am I going to harden? Am I going to get even more, you know, closed off to the possibility and opportunity?
Yeah, totally. But you said it. I mean, you have like really been into understanding the science of manifestation, which is as simple as when your consciousness focuses on it, then you can make it happen. So what was a fork before it was a fork?
Right, right.
A thought.
Right.
Correct. Exactly. So a thought is super powerful. A thought is what creates reality, period. That's just, you can't be skeptical about that. It is just all around us, right? So what happens is if you believe that's true, then you are faced with this choice. Okay, if my thoughts shape my reality and I choose trust and faith and belief in myself and belief in my desires, I will manifest that reality. Now, it may not be on the timeline that you have decided in your egoic mind.
Right.
It may not look the way your egoic mind is saying it has to look, but it doesn't mean it's not coming. And so I think what happens when we are going in and out of trust and faith, and this has happened to me a million times, is holy shit, it hasn't happened yet. What the fuck? Am I some kind of naive idiot who believed in myself or believed in this dream? And I think I always come back to not yet versus no, it's not ever. It's that I have to have belief in this thing that I desire so greatly. So I really think that the antidote to that fear for me of what if it breaks my heart is, but I know that if I believe it, I make it true. So I have a choice to either believe it or stay in the skepticism and not manifest it because I don't believe it.
I think to conclude, really, I think though I've laid out a case that there is a lot of positivity in being skeptical. There are positive aspects. So I think that the key is to find some sort of middle ground, but I can't.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you.
I don't think that's true. I don't think it's fair for you to say you can't. I do think that you have truly evolved your relationship with self, with spirit, with consciousness, like deeply.
I agree.
So I think you have found the balance. I think skepticism shows up and then you work through it. And then you have all of a sudden a new belief in yourself, a new belief in manifestation, maybe eventually a new belief in astrology. I do see you working your way through it. I don't think it's black or white.
I am, but I will say the skepticism feels louder to me than the other side. The skepticism still feels louder to me. And I wanted from you, for me and for listeners who I believe are probably in a very similar boat, how do we find a more palatable middle ground?
When you are in a state of heartbreak or disappointment, the skepticism is going to be at its loudest. So you have to have faith that that phase is going to come to an end because of what you desire.
Good answer.
We're crying. We got the tears.
That's
this
a great
time.
Answer. I think that is a great answer because I do think skepticism, you're right, is louder when you're in moments of fear in other areas as well. When you're feeling
Absolutely.
So scared, the skepticism is louder because it's trying to protect you that much more. That's so
ding,
brilliant.
Ding, ding.
Wow. You're so wise. Wow. Like a miniature Buddha. All right. So
here.
If you tuned in last week, we're closing out our episodes now. It used to be my tangible takeaways, but I really kind of feel like our whole episode is a tangible takeaway. So take
right.
that shit away. So we're just going to close with your listener questions and we're thrilled to have them. And whenever you want to send one in, shoot us an email at
MoriandMelissa@gmail.com. And we'll link that for you in the show notes.
So send us an email and we would love to hear from you and answer any questions you have about anything in your life that you feel we could assist you with. And today's question is, I got this huge opportunity basically handed to me. I'm so grateful for it, but deep down I feel completely unprepared and unworthy of it. I don't even know if I will do a good job, so it now feels more like a scary experience that I have to do rather than an opportunity. I need to shift my mindset, but I can't seem to do it. Any advice?
Wow, my love.
My whole life.
I relate. Oh my God. How much do you relate to this question?
It's like my whole life. Like something great
right?
happens and I'm like, shit, I'm totally unprepared.
Screw this up somehow.
Yeah. All the days.
Yeah. God, I guess my first answer is like, please hear how normal this feeling is.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people are listening to this question, like fully nodding along with this feeling. I think this is a part of the human experience, which is like you keep getting stretched by life experience because it wants to show you your capacity for expansion. And so sometimes it's going to be really freaking scary because what's true is that you've never done the thing before. But that's the way you felt going into your kindergarten classroom. And that's the way you felt on your first day of high school. Okay. And that's the way you felt graduating maybe from college or getting your first job. Like, think back to all the times that a new opportunity for expansion showed up. And it was like, holy shit, can I do this? And then watch how you did it. You fucking did it. You
right.
always do it.
Right.
So believe that you're going to rise to the occasion and that this opportunity, I'm guessing, came out of your own desire. So trust the intelligence of your desires. If you wanted it, it means that it's part of your purpose and that you're meant to have it. There's no way that if you want something and you get it, you're not prepared to step into it and learn and grow. That's the other thing. We are so obsessed with perfection
right.
that we believe we have to like get it spot on the minute we start something new. Hell no. The whole point of being an organism on this planet is growth. And growth only happens through learning. So go into it with an open heart and mind. Hey, I manifested this out of my own desire. That must mean it's my purpose. And I'm going to be open to learning about how to do it or learning about myself through it.
Well said. The only thing I was going to add that I thought was don't discount the fact that somebody gave you this opportunity because they saw something in you. Whether or not
yes.
you see it in yourself, you were given this opportunity because you already proved yourself to get yourself to this place of opportunity. And the second thing was basically to your point of perfectionism is that like, I know Steve Jobs failed multiple times. The people who make it really big, they're not a success overnight. They have the courage to try it and to fail and to grow from that to make the next thing even bigger and better. So even if you're given it and you don't show up in the way that was 100% how you wanted it to go, you now know your takeaway is for your next opportunity you're given.
Love.
Love you.
Love you. Guys, yeah. Thank you so much to listening.
Yeah, both.
Thank you so much. For listening to us. And if you got anything out of this episode, which we really hope that you did, or you related in any way, or you just like Melissa's style, share this episode with someone, and also leave us a review. We so appreciate it. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of Signal. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.